Chapter 1. Journal Entry. 28th of September, 1928.
Year after year, I watch the almighty general preen before his public and those adoring sops that make an annual pilgrimage to Twin Springs just to bask in his glory. He wears the invisible uniform of widower proudly across his chest, and the brainless women melt around him, for him. He holds everything that a man desires within his palm. Women, presence, recognition, power, family, and wealth. Much more than he deserves. Much more than any man deserves. Anyone except me. I followed the general from the Great War to the backwoods of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Even after he left me behind for the mission that granted him so much glory, after my service, he turned away in distaste at the prospect of making me a partner and gave me kitchen servants to command. He thought that would put me in my place, perhaps even placate me. His strategic move gave me my first advantage. It was in the kitchens that I discovered the secret passageway to the tunnels. Within the cavern and tunnels under Twin Springs, I've created the greatest empire known to man. Bootlegging liquor is my own little pot of gold. Money is the answer, the great equalizer. No matter your birthright, if you have enough cash, then kings and generals will bow down to you. Running moonshine is better than greenbacks, and I'm well on my way to becoming the next Rockefeller from selling it to the thirsty masses in D.C. and Richmond. Next, I'll begin siphoning off the general's money, one mishap at a time. Once he hits rock bottom, I'll break him by seizing his most priceless possessions, Twin Springs, and his three daughters, his gems. With a little tutelage, Emma will become a proper wife, and Ruby, with her thick black hair, luscious body, and sultry voice, I've decided to let her live. How I lust for her when she sings. I'll keep her high in Twin Springs Tower, my own little songbird. As for their older sister, Amethyst, I'm still gonna kill her and her unborn babe. I have no choice. The powerful must rule. Lieutenant Porter.
Chapter 2. Prologue.
If Mommy's now an angel, do you think she's watching us?
Izzy mumbled the question around the thumb that she refused to remove from her mouth. Ava Fairbanks wanted to pretend she didn't hear her sister. Her chest ached when they talked about Mom. But Izzy was only 6, and it was her job to take care of her. After all, she was a full 2 years older. Unsure what to say, she entwined her fingers between her sister's and squeezed.
Look up.
Both girls lay beneath the enormous Christmas tree that stood tall and proud in the middle of Twin Springs' grand lobby, the sprawling hotel their family owned and lived in. Boxes wrapped in bright holiday paper guarded the edges, keeping them safe inside their own little world. A few late-night guests walked by chattering, utterly unaware of the hiding, PJ-clad little girls. The scent of freshly cut pine tickled Ava's nose. She breathed in deeply and pointed up to where hundreds of little white lights twinkled within the branches.
I think that when our family goes to heaven, it's their job to watch over us.
Quickly, she wiped away the tear that slipped from the corner of her eye.
Just like those lights, shining down on us.
Izzy sucked hard on her thumb, her brows furrowed. She rubbed the seam of her pink flannel pajamas between her fingers, like it was a blanket.
Do you think they'll tattle on us for playing here?
Her words sounded even more childlike around her thumb. Ava's laughter flowed up through the branches and lit up their secluded world with its magical sound.
Nah, they have more important things to do.
Her little sister snuggled closer to her side, and she wrapped her arms around her and stared up at the lights.
I wish one was Mommy. Then we could talk to her any time we wanted,
she whispered. She picked out the brightest light, tucked high up in the branches, and pretended it was her mother watching over them. Ava's lids grew heavy, and the combination of her sister's warm body and the grand piano playing softly in the background lulled her into a helpless sleep. A silver mist weaved a path down through the branches and hesitated over Izzy. Deep in sleep, Her lashes lay upon her milky white skin, and her long blonde hair covered her shoulders like a thick blanket. Izzy's thumb-sucking sounds were barely discernible within the late-night quiet of the lobby. The haze encircled the little girl's arm and tugged until her thumb burst out of her mouth with a pop. Moving on to Ava, the mist hovered over the length of her body and smoothed the wrinkles in her blue PJs, covered with little white clouds. Raising and lowering in tune with her breathing, it reached out and swept her long black hair away from her sleep-softened face. Leisurely, it lowered and melded with the slumbering girl. Moving with a grace well above her tender age, Ava stepped onto the wooden stage of Twin Springs' theater. The clouds on her pajamas glowed brightly under the floodlights. She flipped her long hair over her shoulder and shook her head, allowing it to flow down her back and shimmer under the sidelight's muted glow. Her body swayed in time with a tune playing in her head. From under her lashes, she stared sightlessly upon the empty seats of her audience, and a low jazz song flowed from her lips. From the depths of her young soul, she belted out a tune of sadness, love, and loss. Her juvenile frame rolled with the highs and lows of the melody until the crescendo where she flung her arms out, tipped her head back, and hit a high note. Angels wept when the magnificent clarity of the sound touched heaven. Lowering her chin, Ava's eyes cleared and her arms dropped limply to her sides. Startled, she blinked and glanced around. The stage lights blinded her and she raised her arms to block the glare. How? At the edge of the stage, her father and Izzy stared up. Her little sister's green eyes were huge in her face, and her soggy thumb hung out of her slack mouth. Their father studied her through wet eyes. His normally tall, strong form was buckled as he held back emotions. Tears ran unchecked down his cheeks and dripped off his jawline. Sucking in a deep breath, he rubbed his hands over his face and wiped away the moisture. Unsure of what had just happened, Ava's chin trembled, and she swallowed hard. Daddy? Silence stretched between them, and a deep fear crept into her heart.
I.
His eyes met hers, and he scraped his fingers through his bright russet hair, searching for words.
I don't know where you heard that song, but you have a gift. A beautiful, one-of-a-kind gift.
Relief flooded her thin frame. Everything would be all right. She had no idea how she'd ended up on the stage or knew the words to the song that she'd just sung. All she remembered was the heady scent of roses, golden eyes, and a desire so deep to sing again that it rocked her soul.
Chapter 3. Present Day. Sergeant First Class Jackson Wolf pushed his night vision goggles up onto his helmet, leaned into his sniper rifle, and adjusted the thermal scope. Through the vision of the special scope, the darkened city below transformed from the night vision's goggles shades of grays and greens into a brilliant palette of oranges, yellows, purples, and blacks. Zero white. White meant the shit was hitting the fan, indicated fire. He panned up and down the street, checking for heat signatures before zeroing in on the squatty, flat-roofed two-story building that his team had just entered. Things were quiet, just like he liked it. Time ticked in his head and he checked the horizon. They were inching up on morning prayers, where the whole city would come alive with loudspeakers broadcasting the call to kneel. His Special Forces teammate crouched down at the corner, rifle ready, protecting the back of their team inside. As a result of his thermal scope, Jackson's view of Woody was just an orange outline with shades of bright yellow along the hottest points of his body. The sandy ground below his feet was a brilliant shade of purple, and the building at his back, a combination of muted tangerine walls and purple uprights. Through one of the windows, he spotted his team's orange bodies filtering by, one after the other, in a silent dance, tagging each other as they infiltrated the building searching for Tango 1 and Tango 2. Get in, grab the bad guys alive, if possible, sweep up any intel, and come home alive. That was the mission. They were lucky for the intel. Not often did a member of the press give up information and expect nothing in return. His mind shifted to the gorgeous tall blonde who'd given them not only the names of the terrorists, but the location and best time to hit the target. If he hadn't seen Doc pull his shoulder on the last drop,
he would have thought he stayed behind just to cozy up to her. The team paused before another window on the second floor, and Jackson frowned.
Bad spot, he murmured. Keep moving, stay out of the kill zone.
He suppressed the urge to break radio silence and tell them to move ass. They understood their jobs. Below him, Woody's orange form moved. He stood and checked his wrist.
Steady,
Jackson whispered, knowing full well his teammate couldn't hear him unless he clicked his mic on.
60 seconds till Xville,
Woody murmured into his throat mic.
Damn it,
grumbled Jackson, annoyed with the break in protocol. Woody was such a surfer boy, all golden blonde smiles and lots of action with the girls.
Thank God, my sister refused to date another guy from my team.
Adopted or not, JD was Jackson's sister. Her childhood had been rough, jerked from orphanage to orphanage, her mother dead and never having known her father. He'd be damned if one of his teammates would jerk her feelings around too. Not even the good-hearted surfer boy, Woody. His heart picked up a beat when Woody's orange form checked the target pack on his wrist. If he didn't pull his shit together, they'd need to switch his nickname to Surfer Girl. Woody's yellow head scanned the area around him, and Jackson shifted his position as an uneasy feeling joined the sweat beads rolling down his back. His instinct screamed, "Shit!" The orange blobs of his teammates scattered from the window, and his headset went crazy. The team sounded off, breaking up and chopping each other's sentences into indiscernible nonsense. Woody jerked the door open to join the fight when the code word avalanche was shouted. Bomb. The floor under Jackson's feet trembled in shades of white with black edges spread across the building's walls, casting out the oranges and purples with the heat of fire. Woody's orange form was dragged into the doorway, only to be expelled in a ball of bright white. One by one, his team stumbled from the building, their once orange forms consumed in a white haze, edged in black. Their screams pierced the desert air. Men spilled from the surrounding buildings, flashes of white expelled from the barrels of their guns, peppering his team's burning forms with bullets. Automatically, Jackson fired, taking out target after target as his team dropped, one after another, and rolled until they laid in white heaps on the purple ground. From the edges of his sight, their forms cooled from white to black, even as he killed the men running towards them. He took out 8 more men.
Shit, there are too many of them.
Jackson activated his command net by squeezing the pressel on the foregrip of his rifle. Request kinetic strike on target, he shouted as he dropped 5 more bad guys. In 30 seconds. Making a choice he'd forever doubt, Jackson jerked down his night vision goggles, abandoned his perch, and thundered down the staircase.
Double time it, damn it. Your team needs you.
In the time it took him to get streetside, only one team member remained alive. He sprinted across the street, his footfalls muted by death screams. The ground was hazy with smoke and the stench of burning flesh permeated the air. His right side on fire, Woody gained his feet and staggered forward. Quickly, Jackson took out 2 more men before he reached his friend. He rolled Woody in the dirt to extinguish the flames, and a bullet pierced his thigh, but Jackson didn't even notice the sting. His adrenaline was running so hot. Grabbing Woody by the collar with one hand, firing from the hip with his rifle, he pulled him to safety. Behind them, the Predator drone dropped fire as the desert sun rose and the speakers spouted morning prayers.